Good morning. Welcome to the KRFY Morning Show for this day, Wednesday, November 7th. I'm your host today, Chris Bessler, and I'm here in the studio today with a pair of guests, and we, believe it or not, are going to be talking about the election. I have with us Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader. Cameron, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And also Jean Girth. And Jean is with multiple organizations in town, but she's also an occasional host here on the KRFY Morning Show. Jean, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Chris.
And my normal co-host, Susie Prez, is out of the area and has the morning off, so it's going to be the three of us. And as I mentioned, we're going to be taking a look at what happened in the election last night. We're going to run through the results of the local races specifically and the state races towards the end of the broadcast. If we have time, we'll take a look at what happened nationally. There was a bit of a big change in Congress for sure. We'll get to those results here in just a minute. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up in Sandpoint, starting with the weather and taking a look at the National Weather Service. We have a chance of rain and snow today, areas of fog, a high of 44 degrees. We're going to see some fog mainly in the morning, but then we're going to see some sun in the afternoon. That sounds pretty good. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, it's pretty much the same, although Friday they're saying there's a likely chance of snow, having a 70% chance of snow coming on Friday with a high of just 40 degrees, a low Friday night of 25 degrees. Going into the weekend, Saturday, we're looking at a high of 42 degrees, going to get some sun Saturday night. And then Sunday, kind of the same, foggy, maybe some precipitation, times of sun. And it's sounding like we have a regular fall happening out there. How's your fall been, Jean and Cameron?
Good, except now I need to get those snow tires on. No more procrastinating.
Yeah, that's advisable for anybody that's listening, actually. If you get in early, you're going to avoid those long lines that you get as soon as the snow starts hitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just stick with my all seasons and pray for the best. So it's not something that I worry too much about. But other than that, fall has been good. I love the fall. So I never complain when it comes around.
Oh, we certainly had some stellar weather there. About 2.5 weeks where it was just glorious. The great temperatures. The leaves were turning.
It was gorgeous. It was makes it easier going into winter.
It mm-hmm. sure does. Warms us up for that. And things going on around town this week. Thought I'd mention just a couple things before we get into talking about the election. Saturday is the SARS Ski Swap. It's at the Bonner County Fairgrounds from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's a big event if you're a skier. It's a great place to get equipment at a real cost savings. They have a ton of stuff there. This is for downhill skiers, for snowboarders, for cross-country skiers. They have winter clothing, winter gear there as well. So if you haven't been to the Ski Swap, check that out. That's at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. If you want to get the best deals, be there lined up at 9 a.m. when they open the door. After that, they're going to have they're going to have a screening of Warren Miller's Face of Winter. That's kind of a tradition here in Sandpoint to show the new Warren Miller ski flick at the Panada. That's at 7 p.m. And, of course, there's a lot of other stuff going on around our town. There's a Nordic Ski Fair coming actually this Thursday. There's a harvest dinner happening at the Hope Community Center Friday. There's a pretty interesting film lined up for Saturday in the Native Heritage Film Series called Man Killer. And that's actually a profile of an Indian woman, believe it or not, I believe. A ton of other things going on. As always, we encourage you to take a look at the community calendars for details on what's happening in our town. You can see that on our website, krfy.org, or on sandpointonline.com, which provides the calendars for KRFY. And with that, let's get on to the main topic of the day. Again, we have with us Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader and Jean Girth, an occasional KRFY host. And we're going to be talking about the local election. And so to run through the results, if you're just getting up and you haven't actually heard what happened yesterday, last night, late into the night, Cam, you were covering things for AP at the courthouse, at the county building. Mm-hmm. And what time did they finish counting finally?
So things more or less wrapped up around, probably 10 after 4 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
We were there very late, and part of that is just the result of it being a high turnout election. You know, there were a lot of ballots to count. On top of that, of course, we had the double ballot, and so that means that there's twice the amount of ballots to process.
But by that you mean they have District 7 to count as well? Is that what you mean?
No. I'm talking about the fact that I believe it was the propositions that were printed on a separate ballot. So in certain elections, you can fit everything onto one ballot, and then that is a simple matter of processing just a single number of sheets for every voter.
It was three sheets per voter last night.
Exactly. And so that also contributed to, it just taking so darn long to count all of the different ballots. You know, there was a lot of paper to push.
Right. And thanks to all those people who stayed up all night and did it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's something that the elections crew over at the county are very tireless about. And, I've been there for the past several election cycles over the past several years. And it seems like, they've always got good spirits and they're always have a very helpful can-do attitude. So I appreciate the way they run their operation as, a professional who works with them.
Well, Chris, let's get to some of the results, because I know some people are sitting on pins and needles.
They're probably wondering what happened. So for a state legislator, let's say position A, state representative, where we had Heather Scott versus Ellen Weissman. And actually, that district encompasses both Bonner and Boundary County. So I'm going to give the results off the top for the total district. It was Heather won 12,676 to 7,264 for Ellen Weissman. In the other state legislative race, the winner of that race was between Sage Dixon and Stephen Hallett. And the total for the district there was 13,227 for Sage and 6,744 for Stephen, the Democrat.
Giving Sage the win.
Is the win, yeah.
For people who aren't processing numbers so well this morning.
Yeah, okay, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Sage is the winner, and of course, Heather is the winner of that District A, District One position A race. For state Senate, the winner was the Republican Jim Woodward. He opposed Vera Gadman, and the total there was 14,831 for Jim Woodward, 5,125 for Vera Gadman. And turning to the county races, for County Commissioner District 1, that was Stephen Bradshaw, the Republican, versus Steve Johnson, the Democrat. Bradshaw is the winner with 11,363 to 6,825 for Steve Johnson. For County Commission District 3, hard-fought race there. It was Steve Lockwood, the Democrat, against Dan McDonald, the Republican. And McDonald was the winner with 10,810 to 7,442 for Steve Lockwood. And another contested race was assessor. I do not have those numbers in front of me. I don't know.
I can get them.
But the winner there was Donna Gow by a large margin.
Mm-hmm.
And
if people want to look this up, there's all the numbers are at the Bonner County Election website. And we're all sitting here with our little screen cell phones trying to look this stuff up. But Chris, what was the you had the numbers for the percentage of turnout, which was
the percentage
high.
Of turnout was it was very high for a midterm election. There were 22,234 registered voters. These are preliminary results, so things might add up a little bit differently in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And the turnout was 72.95. We're going to round it up, say almost 73% of registered voters voted. Now, you compare that to previous midterm elections, and it's far higher. In the 2014 election, the turnout was 57%. In the 2010 election, the turnout was 59%. So typically, a midterm election gets a turnout in the 50-60% range. And we were pushing 73%. And that's more like what you see in an election year when you have a president on the ballot.
Yeah, I just looked up the general election in 2016, and it was 71.2%. So it actually exceeded, I think I got those numbers right, that this midterm election exceeded the number of percentage of voters that came out in 2016 when there was a presidential election going on. So yeah. A lot of interest, obviously.
You want, I've got the numbers for a couple of these other contested races here. Yep. So as far as the assessor is concerned, Wendell Bergman received 3,711 votes against Donna Gao, who really kind of dominated the election here at 13,171 votes.
And I believe that Wendell didn't declare until fairly late in the cycle.
Yes, yeah, that's correct.
As an independent.
Yeah. And we also have the Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District, which actually came fairly narrow. It had some fairly narrow results here toward the middle there. So for those who didn't follow that election, and it's kind of a little bit more of a tucked away office. People don't really see their work as much. But we had a couple of challengers take on the two incumbents, Alan Banks and Thomas Clark. And if you followed at all our coverage in the Reader, you'd know that, we tried getting a hold of them, but they were just not able to be contacted.
Banks and Clark. And we had the same result here because we did do a series of interviews with candidates. We both called through. They didn't have a phone number to call them or an email.
Yeah.
So we actually sent them a letter saying, please come in.
So did we. Yeah.
And they were running, a stealth campaign. But it didn't pay off for them.
Well, it didn't, but it actually came fairly close here. So Alan Banks, he got 3,881 votes. Thomas Clark got 4,454 votes. And then the incumbents did take it, but for Terry McGuirk, she came down to a pretty close margin here of 4,874 votes. And then Dale Van Stone, who's, the most well-known person in that role, and he's been doing it for decades, he came out pretty handily ahead with 7,795 votes.
And this was, there were two seats open, so it was the highest two vote-getters in there. But I was pretty surprised at that, too.
Yeah.
There's obviously a cadre of people who are voting is a block.
Either that or because of their arranged in alphabetical order, Alan Banks and Thomas Clark were the first two names on the ballot.
Yeah.
But I thought the ballot that they mixed up the names, maybe not for that office.
I don't think they do for that office because I saw it in alphabetical order. I don't know if when you guys voted.
I didn't notice when I voted because I know the other offices, they don't put them in the same order for every ballot.
They're supposed to, but I'm pretty sure for this one, because it's kind of a minor office normally, it's not even something to vote on there because they have to go out and recruit people to get on
it's a volunteer the board. Position.
It's a volunteer position. Banks and Clark did marshal a good degree of support. Somehow.
Especially for people who, as far as I can see, spent, not a single calorie of energy campaigning for the position.
Out of their way to not be found.
Yeah.
Chris, tell us about Prop 2. It was just so exciting.
Yes, Prop 2. So Proposition 2 was the proposition to expand Medicaid. It was kind of a homegrown effort here. It started with some folks from Bonner County, or who were from Bonner County, and it won rather handily statewide. It received 60.8% of the statewide vote to 39.2% who voted no against it. So we're going to be expanding Medicaid. That is, if the legislature actually enacts the laws they're supposed to. Now, sometimes an initiative that's put forward by the people gets kind of smothered by the legislature if they happen to disagree. We're going to see how that plays out. Of course, legislators that fail to execute the will of the people theoretically would face their wrath in an ensuing election. But But you don't know what's going to happen with that when it gets down to legislature.
That's true.
But it's a great sign. It's one of, I think, two other normally Republican states nationally voted to expand Medicaid in a similar fashion.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, even though this was a kind of a homegrown effort, it started with some people here that pushed it out statewide. In Bonner County, it won by a narrower margin. I don't have the percentage, but I do have the numbers. The yes vote was 98-67. The no vote was 87-17. So it won by a little over 1,000 votes. People in Bonner County favored it. Up north in Boundary County, I always like to look there because they're part of our first district. It actually failed. The no votes there were 23-13. The yes votes were 19-35. So it lost by a small margin up in Boundary County. But again, statewide Medicaid expansion was approved by the voters last night by a healthy margin, 60.8% to 39.2%. There was another proposition on the ballot last night. It was the legalizing historical horse racing machines. It's kind of like a slot machine, basically. Mm-hmm. It was there was a lot of money that went into that race, pro and con, and the no votes won. So 54.2% of the voters statewide voted against historical horse racing machines, and the yes vote was 45.8%. So that was a interesting result of that, because there were powerful interests on both sides, basically, behind that particular one.
Mm-hmm.
We got through all the offices.
We haven't got through all the offices. Okay. I wanted to, for folks that haven't caught up yet on everything, let's run through some of the statewide offices. United States Representative District 1, Russ Fulcher, the Republican, won rather handily over Christina McNeil, the Democrat. Russ Fulcher got 62% of the vote. Christina McNeil got 31%. There were some other candidates there. They got some minor numbers. An independent, Natalie Fleming, got almost 2% of the vote. But Russ Fulcher will be our next congressman for our district. Down south, we didn't get a vote on this one, but in District 2, Mike Simpson, the Republican, got 60% of the vote. He's an incumbent. He'll stay in office. The Democrat, Aaron Swisher, there got 39% of the vote. And so the winner there, Mike Simpson, the Republican. For governor, that was a pretty well contested, and it's a race that got a lot of interest nationally because Paulette Jordan was a woman and a Native American running for office. But the Republican, Brad Little, was the winner there with 59.5% of the vote statewide. Paulette Jordan got 38.4% of the vote statewide. So our next governor is going to be Brad Little. Of course, he's the current lieutenant governor. And for lieutenant governor to replace Brad Little now, the new one will be Janice McGeachin. She got 59.3%. She's a Republican. She defeated the Democrat Kristen Collum with 40.7%. Secretary of State, Republicans again win there. Lawrence Denny got 62% of the vote, and the Democrat Jill Humble got 37%. Another contested state race is actually the closest race in the state on the statewide offices was for superintendent of public instruction, where the Republican incumbent, Sherry Ibarra, got 51.2% to the Democratic challenger, Cindy Wilson, who got 48.8%. So the Republican did retain her office, but it was a close race there. Attorney General, the Republican Lawrence Wasdin got 65% of the vote to the Democrat Bruce Beislein's 35%. So the Republican Wasdin stays is in office there. And that's pretty much the statewide races. I think I would like to mention also that District 7, which incorporates a little bit of Bonner County for the legislative districts, it incorporates the portion basically of Sagal east of Highway 95 and south of Lake Pend Oreille. And there were uncontested races there, so no surprises there. But the state senator for District 7, Carl Crabtree, will retain his seat. The state representative for position A, Priscilla Giddings, going to retain her seat. State representative position B for Paul Shepard, he'll retain his seat as well. And those, well, it was uncontested. So, of course, they won in Bonner County, our little bit of that huge district, which runs all the way down to Riggins. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's you drive out of the district and back into it as you're going down south quite a ways.
It's not a district that's really, it kind of disenfranchises people in Sagal. They're so far removed from where the voting population is.
I'm in that district, and I don't think anybody came to any, but to the forums that I attended, there weren't any candidates.
No candidates, yeah. Yeah, they don't really probably feel the need to do much campaigning up here. Although in the last cycle, 2 years ago, they did campaign up here. They were contested, so that brought them up.
They did come up.
More. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I misspoke about the percentage in the general election last time. I'm just having a hard time reading the thing. The turnout was probably...
It was actually close to 80%, I think.
In
2 years ago, the general election with the presidential election. So we didn't match that this election, but again, our turnout was far higher than we've seen historically for midterm elections. That's because there was so much interest, I think, in the national election. Mm-hmm. President Trump, he incites either great... support or great opposition, and that's kind of flowed down to all these state races as well.
Do you know what the national turnout was?
I have not gotten that figure.
Yeah. No, I haven't either.
We're so mired in our local races
and our little statistics here.
But haven't had a time to look up.
So Idaho remains completely Republican for all of its statewide and federal offices, mm-hmm. and Bonner County. The same.
Yeah, Bonner County and Boundary County, yep.
And, that's kind of what I anticipated when people were asking me what I was thinking was going to happen in this election. You know, my common line was, you know, I don't really anticipate any surprises, with the possible exception that I did think that Proposition 2 was going to pass, mm-hmm. just because, you know, team behind that proposition did such an excellent job with outreach and building a bipartisan team of support. I think that the Butch Otter endorsement toward the end was a pretty significant factor in getting in building just how monumentally successful it was at 60%. Of the vote.
And Butch Otter, our Republican governor, that was a big
that was a big
endorsement.
Yeah, that was a big fish to land.
There were quite a few Republicans who had endorsed that previously and worked on that team.
Yeah.
And that was part of the, I'm sure, part of the reason that
Absolutely. Our own Sean Keogh was a very vocal proponent of it. Sean does have a lot of respect among certain circles of the Republican crowd. So, you know, she has been doing what she does for a very long time.
She showed up at the party last night.
Briefly.
The organizers, it was fun. It was fun.
The organizers, Luke Mayfield and
Garrett,
Emily.
Emily.
Yeah.
Sturich.
Yeah, they're the folks that launched the campaign and guided it through. Tremendous amount of work. Volunteers all over the state. They were crisscrossing the state in not one but two different vans.
Mm-hmm. I think the first one finally got.
Well, they added to their fleet.
Oh, so they could
end.
Do more.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. They upgraded.
And if people haven't heard the story, you probably have by now, but both Luke and Garrett are from Sandpoint and have come back to take on a local issue.
I was getting messages maybe toward the, what was it, like the 10 o'clock range, people saying, oh, you should come down, and, you know, they're coming by to, you know, celebrate the victory and that sort of thing. And I was just like, well, that sounds like a lot of fun. But
you were... You were working.
I'm stuck in the county building for the foreseeable future, and it turned out to be a very lengthy foreseeable future.
There's a lot of waiting that happens there, isn't
there? A lot of waiting.
While they're doing all the counting up, yeah.
I played a lot of Civilization VI.
Well, let's talk about some of the races and maybe dissect, you know, how they went the way they went. Although, I got to say, in Bonner County, if you have an R behind your name, you've got a huge advantage in the election.
I think it's just baked in. I looked this up one time, and I think it's been at least 8 years since there's been any Democrat.
I think Marie Scott, the county clerk, was the last elected
one.
Democrat.
Yeah.
And it's hard for folks to believe, but in the 80s up into the mid-90s, this was predominantly Democrat.
When I came here.
Our entire legislative delegation were all Democrats. The county commissioners were usually mostly Democrat. The county clerk, many of the county offices were Democrat. The same was true up in Boundary County as well. And since the mid-90s, actually one of the probably watershed years was when Sean Keogh came into office. Mm-hmm. She beat an incumbent that had been in that position for a number of years in the legislature. And it's been trending Republican ever since. But with that said, aside from the fact that you have a big advantage just being a Republican when you're running, in the County Commission District 3 race, it was probably one of the most hotly contested races, where the Democratic challenger, Steve Lockwood, did do a big campaign. He worked very hard out there. And again, it was Lockwood versus Dan McDonald. And Dan McDonald is the winner there with 10,810 votes to Steve Lockwood's 7,442. Cameron, what would if you were going to guess, what would you say some of the factors for voters in that race were, just aside from political party?
Well, it was interesting to watch the Lockwood-McDonald race because, some of the early numbers that we were getting showed a very close race. When people were asking me personally about it on Twitter and whatnot, I was, trying to make sure that they understood that, these things have a tendency to start out kind of close and then get a lot more distance as time goes on in favor of the Republican candidate. That's just the way that the numbers sway around here.
I've always assumed that's because the urban districts, Sandpoint, comes in first, and then it's more the outlying. Is that true?
Well, that's not always true, because sometimes with the population bases, it takes those districts a little bit longer to report in.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you can have strongholds for what are traditionally more left-leaning candidates here that don't show up until, a little bit later in the night. But then you also have to factor in the fact that a lot of those outlying precincts, they have to travel a pretty significant distance just to get the ballots in. And so they're always kind of latecomers.
Right.
And that means that they get counted later in the evening. And that's sort of the dynamic that you see there with the Republican candidates putting so much space between themselves and their Democratic challengers.
And the first results that came in, I think, were just the absentee ballots.
Those were just the absentee ballots.
And that, there was a 7-vote difference between Lockwood and McDonald early in the evening.
Yeah.
And it changed.
But I think there were a lot of factors in that race. Lockwood and McDonald took very distinct positions on a number of issues. If you went to the forum that the Reader and KRFY and Keoki all put together, they took pretty they clashed quite a bit on things like the smelter. Dan McDonald is taking more of a wait and see approach, whereas Lockwood is pretty aggressively against it. Other issues. Like commissioner salaries, and you know, Lockwood was using that as kind of a hammering point against McDonald, claiming that he approved a salary for himself. Of course, McDonald was saying that, hey, he was the commissioners were just following the lead of their third party source that recommends the levels of compensation for county employees. So that was a pretty aggressive moment.
There was also a difference on their stance on Proposition 2.
Yes.
And that surprised me a little bit, because I was thinking a lot of people would be coming out because of Proposition 2, and that because statewide it was seemed pretty clear even before the election that there was a lot of support for Proposition 2. But you're saying the numbers from Bonner County
were closer.
Were closer, yeah. And so yeah. That didn't work to the...
The voices that were against Proposition 2 here were they're making a pretty strenuous argument against it, based on basically the fact that it's, you know, it's an extension of Obamacare, and that model is bad, they feel.
Mm-hmm.
It was the libertarian.
Exactly. It boils down to the basic philosophy that any expansion of government service is a bad thing.
Right.
And, you know, so they are likely, that crowd's likely going to be philosophically opposed to anything with that sort of, you know, association. So.
Of course, the proposition obviously got a lot of Republican support,
yeah,
locally, to win at all,
at
locally,
all.
And to win statewide.
And I feel like that's part of the nationwide dynamic that we're seeing now, where suddenly Obamacare is a relatively popular policy. And a lot of Republicans around the country were having a hard time justifying their anti-Obamacare stance with the, you know, popular position now, which is, you know, protect pre-existing conditions, right, and don't take away access to, you know, these health exchange markets. So,
and that kind of came in late in the election campaigning too. Was Republicans noticing that people wanted pre-existing conditions?
That healthcare was actually an issue for a lot of people.
Right. Well, yeah, and let us not forget, it was only a few short months ago that Republicans were trying mightily in Congress to repeal Obamacare, yeah, and we all saw how that went. So
yeah, so we were talking about the kind of the disparity between certain parts of the county and who they vote for. The county's divided up into 32 different precincts, and they tally votes by precinct, so you can see different areas of the county and how they vote. And in this particular race for county commissioner, District 3, where it was Lockwood versus McDonald, Lockwood actually carried several of these precincts with large margins. The Baldy precinct, he won 504 votes to 385 for McDonald. The Beach precinct, 514 to 235.
That's essentially Sandpoint. They renamed Sandpoint precinct Beach.
Beach, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And then Humber, that's a new name. I think it was once Farman or something. I can't remember. They did do some changes in names here. Lockwood again won there, 458 to 296. The Washington precinct, he won 692 to 381. But most of the other precincts, Dan McDonald carried as you got out of Sandpoint, the Sandpoint precincts, by large numbers. The Kerrywood precinct, Dan won 443 to 110 for Lockwood. The Edgemere was even a wider margin, 744 to 191,
wow,
for Lockwood. Old Town was 555 for McDonald to 220 for Lockwood. The other more rural precincts, they all had margins for McDonald. So we do see that urban-rural split. And you would think in a little town like this, it would be less pronounced. You'd see that same split happening nationally. The mm-hmm. big urban areas tend to go for the Democrats, and the rural areas tend to go for the Republicans. And it's reflected even here in our little chunk of North Idaho.
Well, it's true, and Sandpoint is reflective of that, you know, cultural contrast or that cultural clash in a lot of different ways. You know, we've seen it in issues like how heated, you know, the debate over refugee resettlement mm-hmm. got, you know, a few years back, and that was, you know, a tiny little microcosm of the national split. So, yeah, Sandpoint is you know, kind of the micro version of these macro issues in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Sandpoint and Bonner County.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's take a look at the County Commission District 1 race, where we had Stephen Bradshaw, the Republican, defeating Steve Johnson, the Democrat. And the vote total there actually was even a little more skewed for the Republican. Bradshaw got 11,300 to 6,800 for Johnson. Now, that was a race where Johnson actually came in kind of late,
July 4th.
Before he entered the race.
Yeah.
That was well after the primary, so he didn't have the advantage of being a primary candidate and getting your name out for that. Mm-hmm. Now, Steve Johnson's run for a number of other offices.
I think he's run for commissioner twice, once as an independent. And he's lived here his whole life.
Yeah. He's a farmer. He was an educator at Southside, well-known. But Bradshaw, who is a pastor at a church in Kokalala.
Cowboy Church.
The Cowboy Church, they call it, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he enjoyed the benefit you have of being a Republican, for sure.
Yeah.
It
seems like, I want to look at these figures more, but it seems like to break out of the 30s, the 30% as a Democrat seems to be pretty difficult. And Lockwood got 44. Does that look right? 44%?
That's probably about right.
Yeah. So you can gain maybe 10 percentage points in there. But
yeah. We're having to actually do the math to get the percentages on these local
races. Oh, right.
it's not on the spreadsheet we got from the county.
But yeah, it just being a Democrat might get you 30%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A Republican gets you a lot
in
more.
That particular race, issue that kind of separated the other commissioner race was the smelter. Mm-hmm. In the District 1 race with Bradshaw and Johnson, they both actually spoke up pretty strongly opposed to the smelter. So,
It's
not as big a difference, whereas Lockwood probably picked up some support from people that are very concerned about the smelter, mm-hmm. and wouldn't normally vote for a Democrat. They did. Didn't see that difference of opinion here between these two candidates.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, the thing about Stephen Bradshaw is that he's got a lot of sway with, you know, the very religious conservative voter that is also very much the base for figures like Heather Scott, right? Stephen Bradshaw is associated with, for instance, the Inland Northwest Freedom Festival, which is a very religious kind of look at politics specifically ideas about America being a fundamentally Christian nation and that sort of thing. And those are, you know, relatively well-attended events. I was there at one, and they got a whole, you know, hundreds of people over at the fairgrounds, mm-hmm. there. I think they took it south of town for the most recent one. But anyway, he's definitely built up a name for himself among that voting bloc. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So beating him, even, you know, discounting the power of the R on the ballot. I mean, he's built up a reputation alongside the natural boost that the Republican brand gives you on an Idaho ballot.
And that still seems to count around here as those networks that you have, the personal networks.
Oh, yeah.
People, it's not all social media.
Yeah.
So let's talk just a little bit more about the local races, and hopefully we'll have a little time to talk about some of the statewide races as well. In the legislative races, no surprises there as far as I could see. The Republicans won pretty handily in all of them. in the state Senate race had the biggest margin, where Jim Woodward defeated the Republican defeated Vera Gadman with a total in the district of 14,831 for Woodward and 5,125 for Vera Gadman. Vera barely campaigned, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
She didn't come to the forum.
No, she did not.
She didn't.
She did submit a questionnaire response
to the profiles that were done in the reader.
Yes. So she did do that, but to my knowledge, that was kind of the extent of what she did.
Yeah.
And that process of having a placeholder, I saw a letter to the editor criticizing that the people could step in after the primary, but it's a pretty well-established strategy, which is when a party doesn't have a candidate that's come forward before the primary who really wants to run, you run somebody in this instance for the Democratic Party, and they're called the placeholder. So it's somebody who, no, I don't want to run, but I want to keep that space open if somebody wants to step up. And in that case, then the party gets to decide who, if you haven't won the primary race and somebody drops out, then the party decides that that's...
The party can appoint the...
Thank you.
The candidate for that space.
Which is what happened with Steve Johnson, because Pat Wentworth had been the placeholder and Steve Johnson came in after the primary.
And she removed herself, but nobody stepped forward in this race for state Senate.
And I think part of that's because Jim was he was endorsed by Sean Keogh. And
Yeah.
Didn't seem to be a controversial candidate.
Yeah, and Sean Keogh certainly has her critics from the right, but among people that are more aligned toward the center, whether you be a Republican or a Democrat, she has always, at least for the past several years, maintained a very strong reputation with both of those camps. Mm-hmm. So.
She's proven to listen to any constituent. She doesn't really parse them out by party, I don't think.
Well, she does have a reputation for that. And
a reputation for her?
Yeah, and as a professional who's worked with her for many years now, she was always extremely easy to work with, always very responsive to questions. Yeah. As you know, and most of the listeners probably know, that's not the case across the board with our legislative contingent. So
let's talk about the other two races. For the state representative position B, District 1, it was Sage Dixon again defeating Stephen Hallett. This is actually Stephen's second try at that position against Sage both times. Sage won. The Republican won rather handily with 10,098 votes to 5,593 for Stephen Hallett. And that kind of reprises the same sort of results that Stephen had 2 years ago when he ran against Sage, and kind of points up the difficulty of being a Democrat running in a Republican district, I think. Same, again, sort of results with Heather Scott versus Ellen Weissman. Heather, the incumbent Republican, and Ellen, the Democrat. Again, Heather won with 95-99 to 61-26. That's our local Bonner County results. District-wide, Heather won with 12,676 to 72-64 for Ellen. Again, pretty wide margin there. I don't know if there was anything. Heather had the, to me, it was a little bit interesting. She's a very strong opponent of the smelter. That's a issue that seems to be crossing party lines. Mm-hmm. A lot of Democrats are against it. A lot of Republicans are against it. And so that probably eased some folks that might be more moderate into voting for Heather because of her, they feel strongly about the smelter issue. And Heather's been a kind of the leading force.
Yeah, she came out very early.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's been aggressive about it, too. And that's kind of her style, is that when she picks an issue, she, goes for it. And I think both her critics and her supporters will definitely acknowledge that about her. Mm-hmm. And she's taken that same style to this issue with the smelter, And probably more than anyone, I have to say that she's delivered some results on it. Yeah, so
it's an interesting incongruity that I haven't wrapped my head around, though, is that she's very vocal about not wanting federal interventions.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when the smelter comes along, she's supporting trying to get a national environmental impact statement going. And so I'm sure as a politician, it's got to be a hard line to walk, but she's kind of anti-government, and at the same time, she's in the government.
Well, I think she's using the levers of influence that she has available to her, mm-hmm. probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So in that sense, it's probably not too incongruent. That's kind of the local race. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take if you're just tuning in, folks, this is the KRFY Morning Show. I'm Chris Bessler, the host. I'm here with Cameron Rasmussen and Gene Girth, and we're parsing out the local and state election results. And we're going to take a 2-minute break, let people catch their breath here, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the state races. Governor race was an interesting one for sure. We'll talk about that, where Brad Little beat Paulette Jordan, but she actually won some parts of the state. So we'll dig in on that a little bit. First, we're going to listen to La Bamba by Richie Valens, and I'm not quite sure why I picked that song, except that I like it. So we'll be back in just a little over 2 minutes. And that was Richie Valens' La Bamba. This is KRFY 88.5 Community Radio. And The Morning Show. I'm Chris Bessler, your host. We're here again with Cameron Rasmussen, Gene Girth. We're looking over the results of the local and state races in the election yesterday. And there's been a lot to talk about. We've been talking about the local races. Actually, we got a call during the song. And somebody else told us that they saw the candidates for the Soil and Water Conservation District listed alphabetically. We were kind of had a little discussion about the fact that the two challengers came up first on the ballot may have helped them get some votes. In the end, it didn't make any difference because the two incumbents, Terry McGurk, and Dale Vanstone, did prevail there. But it kind of goes to the fact that two guys that did not even campaign or provide any way for the public to hear from them about their views got a good number of votes. And maybe your position on the ballot does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So
I would rather think that than the stealth campaign.
The stealth campaign actually got them close enough to have us talking about it, at least.
It doesn't strike me as very democratic.
Not when you don't even know who the candidates are.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Let's talk about some of the statewide races. I thought the most interesting race was the race for governor. Again, we had Paulette Jordan, a Native American woman, going against Brad Little, the incumbent lieutenant governor. And, you know, Brad is the Republican again. He's had that advantage going into it. He was the winner. But this is a race that got some national attention because the idea that Paulette would have been the first Native American woman to be a governor. I think the first Native American governor, period.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
She lost here in Bonner County. The vote went for Brad Little, but she did win some parts of the state. In Lewis County, hold on, that was not Lewis County. I'm looking online here. In Ada County, Paulette got 49.7% of the vote, and Brad Little got 48.6%.
The Boise area.
That's the Boise area. That's actually the most populous. Lincoln County, excuse me, I'm not getting the right numbers here from online. Blaine County, Paulette polled very well there. She got 69% of the vote to 29% for Brad Little.
Do we know where Blaine County is?
It's down in the southern middle of the state. And Minidoka County, which is adjacent to Blaine, again, southern middle of the state. Excuse me. My online-ness here is not coming up.
And her home county, I don't know. She's from the Lewiston area, Moscow.
Yeah, in Latah County. She won in Latah County with 51% to 47% for Brad Little. And then way over in Teton County, that's the very eastern part of the state. It's kind of not far from the national park, Yellowstone National Park. It's on the border, actually. Part of it might actually be in the park. I can't tell from this map, but Paulette got 53% of the vote to 42% for Brad Little. So she did well in pockets around the state. I think she probably did better than a Democrat's done in a while.
Overall.
Digging around for my numbers on that. Statewide, the vote there was 59% went for Brad and 38% went for Paulette Jordan. Still, that might be better, but it's still a landslide for Brad.
Yeah. And you know, for a lot of people, Paulette was a really exciting candidate. But, I mean, the lesson there is, and you kind of saw that reflected in how many people were disappointed with the results of the Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz election.
In Texas
was, you know, the lesson there is that you can have an exciting candidate, but you're still going to be fighting an uphill battle in a place like Idaho or Texas, which has been enormously a red state for a very long time. I feel like some of these more impressive showings do lay groundwork for maybe more competitive races in the future. But that's work that, you know, that's a trail that needs to be blazed before you can see any kind of culmination of those efforts. So, yeah.
And the demographic is changing, mm-hmm. and I think that's going to drive future results, the number of millennials.
Yeah. I would just recommend for disappointed blue voters out there that you exercise some patience when it comes to these things, because changing a state with this entrenched of a political culture, it's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. So,
and it takes a lot of patience, yes, work too. And mm-hmm. we were just talking over the break that the Proposition 2 passed, but it still needs the legislature to formulate the law around it. And so there's still work to be done there because they're going to want to get their fingers in the pie. And there's been other propositions that have passed that got killed in the legislature. Brad Little said he would support it, so having the governor, I'm sure, helps. But there's more work to be done.
Yeah, Brad Little did say he would go with whatever the voters decided on that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that might give it a help is that actually it is a fiscally conservative thing for the state.
Right, and Butch Otter came out.
And Butch Otter came out because of that fact. There's federal money. You know, we pay into one of the arguments was that we pay in our taxes. Other states are taking advantage of Medicaid expansion that brings in a bunch of money. Over 90% of the funding comes from the federal government, but we're not enjoying that money to help our citizens. And when you work it out in the costs of people who are uninsured going to emergency rooms to get care, county indigent funds having to cover that, the impact that has when indigent people go into for medical service, and it drives up the cost of medical services for everybody else because those people can't pay. It's actually a fiscally conservative thing to do to accept the Medicaid expansion. Now, that doesn't going to fly necessarily with people that are ideologically opposed, but...
No, but I think some of the support for this must have come from the fact that it's also, to me, in my value system, it was the right thing to do. There were a lot of people who couldn't have insurance, and they were paying the price while some of the rest of us benefit from either the Medicaid system or the fact that our insurance is subsidized by Obamacare or that we were lucky enough to have our own.
Well, and I think people are justifiably frustrated at this point. You know, we've had almost a decade of kicking the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to a certain point where if you can't get access to healthcare, well, you know,
people,
that's something that needs to get addressed.
People died because of that. Yeah.
I feel like it was the right time to finally do something. And now it's the ball's in the state's court and we're gonna see what happens with it. So
we need to keep people who have an opinion about this need to keep talking to their legislators.
Oh, hold on, guys. I hit the wrong button here.
Are we back? Oh, we got a song.
We got a song.
That's fine.
And we're about out of time anyways. So
okay.
We're going to go ahead and check out. Thanks, Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Gene, for coming in.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was interesting.
And thanks for listening, folks. Sorry about this miscue on the soundboard. Bye now.